Thank you very much for coming on the last day of the talk, of the talks. Now, a hole in holography. So we have seen this diagram on this board probably 100 times in the last weeks. And the interesting thing is, what happens? What does this arrow really mean? And can we follow it down? And usually, OK. Postulate 4 tells us that there's no drama, so nothing special happens when we go there. So usually what that is taken to mean is that I can zoom in on this little piece of the diagram. And when I zoom in on it, it looks like this, which is just Rindler space. And so if I have some modes A and B, they live in a particular entangled state of the modes on the left and on the right-hand side. Now, I never was quite sure if I should. And this is obviously related to a theme that we discussed or you discussed in the last week of the workshop, which is entanglement and its relatedness to connectedness. So I was never quite convinced about this picture for the horizon of a black hole. So I'd like to understand this. Of course, we know that this works for a Rindler horizon, which is planar. But does this work for spherical horizons, is the question I want to ask. So my goal here is to understand spherical surfaces. Eventually, I will want to understand spherical horizons. But as a first step, let me just understand spherical surfaces. So that's my motivation. Spherical surfaces. Not quite in black hole backgrounds yet. That's for the future, but in just ADS. And as soon as I stated this overt goal, I'm going to generalize it in one way, and I'm going to specialize it in another way. So the specialization is that I'm going to work in ADS-3 specifically. And the generalization is that I won't necessarily be talking about spherical surfaces. I want to talk about any closed, I would say surfaces, but because we're in ADS-3, what I really mean is closed curves in the interior of ADS-3. OK, and this is the goal for, this is the motivation for the talk. Now, this is the motivation with which I started working on this subject. But at the end of the day, or at the end of this half an hour, I'm going to answer two questions which are related to this question. The good thing is that I will give you a complete and explicit answer to two questions which are related to this. One question is, compute the length of a curve in the bulk. Compute the length of a curve in bulk from dual field theory. Any curve. And the second problem, or the second question, is generalized entanglement entropy. So generalize the notion of entanglement entropy to regions which are bounded in time. So we know how to talk about the entropy of a region which is spatially bounded. And for that, entanglement entropy is perhaps not the only one, but one way in which we can quantify its information content. Well, I want to talk about regions bound in time. And as usual, when people pose two problems in a talk, usually it's because the two questions will end up answering one another. So that's what we're going to find here. So how am I going to construct my, I'm interested in a closed curve. I said that I would generalize to any closed curves, but let me start with the simplest case, which is just a spherical curve. So here's a spherical curve in ADS. And I want to think of this as giving for me a horizon of some, as being related to a horizon of some kind. I know exactly how to do this, because the goal is to understand to what extent this Rindlerization picture is applicable. So if I want to talk about the spherical surface, what I need to do is simply Rindlerize around a spherical surface. Does that make sense? So I'm going to consider a family of accelerated observers. It's a family of them. And their accelerations and initial positions and velocities are picked in such a way that none of them sees the interior of this sphere or of the circle, I really will be talking about it as a whole, hence the title. So here's a single observer who accelerates away from the hole. And I picked him in such a way, or her in such a way, that if the trajectory is always causally disconnected from the interior of the sphere. The way I should have really drawn it is that, well, OK, what do we know about such an accelerated trajectory? We know that it's going to asymptote to a light-like trajectory, which corresponds to a light ray that was ejected orthogonally away from the curve. So I can just eject the light ray. It's going to reach the boundary at some finite time. And we know that what this Rindler space that I'm trying to construct is going to cover is precisely the regions which are, which are space-like separated from the interior of the hole. And the boundary of such a region, in other words, the horizon of this region, is going to be the light sheet which emanates from my hole. That's what I'm going to do. I talked about really a single observer who accelerates away from the hole, but I have to send out such an observer from every possible direction so that the union of them never sees the hole, but the union of them also includes, every direction that surrounds the hole. So I will have a construction like that, and from every direction, I'm sending out some accelerated observers. They will, in general, not see each other. What's that? Are which the Sitter slices? So I'm going to write for you an explicit metric that covers just this this piece of the bulk. But while I'm erasing, let me talk about what's on the picture. So I have drawn a bunch of light-like trajectories that depart away from the hole and reach the boundary. So there are a couple of things in this picture that we should take out. One is that I'm going to there's only a finite time piece of the boundary which is causally connected with the which is causally disconnected from the interior of the hole. That's one thing. Another thing is that because I have constructed my bulk spherical Rindler ADS space, so I'll be talking about the space as spherical Rindler ADS, because I've constructed it as the union of what Rindler observers from different directions see, naturally on the boundary, this time strip also decomposes into a union of regions which correspond to observations made by a specific observer approaching this hole or really accelerating away from the hole and from a particular direction. So in other words, just like the union in the bulk, spherical Rindler and ADS, is the union of ordinary ADS, Rindler ADS spaces. In the bulk, this finite time strip of the field theory is the union of causal diamonds. And each causal diamond is related to a single direction from which I can approach and go away from the curve. Does that make sense? So I'm going to write down the metric which just does the job. L is the Sitter radius here. Oh, and here I will have to look at my notes. Okay. So this is the metric we obtain, and one thing that you can see from, well, there are a couple of things that we can derive, that we can recognize from the metric itself. One thing is that it's easy to say what the entropy of this region is going to be. And actually, before even looking at the metric, I think we have a feeling of what the entropy should be. It should be the area of that horizon, which is just the length of the curve. And this is where I tie in with the first question that I posed for myself, compute the length of the curve. Well, the length of the curve is really the entropy of this region, if I'm speaking in the bulk. Yeah. As seriously as you would take it for a Rindler, Rindler space, and would you say that a Rindler horizon has a IR divergent entropy? I think yes. Well, there are plenty of papers that establish this and or use this fact. And every other set of notes about black holes just says, oh, this looks like Rindler. Therefore, we know what the entropy is. It's just 1 over 4g times the transversal area. No one observer sees this. I've constructed the space as the union of it is different. Yeah, that's the novel thing about this. Yeah, that's the novel thing about this. So. So let's talk about this. So indeed, you could be worried about time dependence. I don't want to get into the subject of to what extent it is justified. I don't want to spend too much time on the subject of to what extent it is justified to talk about the entropy of spherical Rindler spaces being the area of the horizon. Let me just point out one thing about this. What happens when I send when I go to the R going to zero limit, which means that I'm approaching this horizon? What happens is that this metric starts looking like L squared minus R squared dt squared plus dr squared plus R naught squared d theta squared. Do you agree with that? And so now this looks like ordinary Rindler space and some transversal size, and that transversal size is exactly what we would say is the entropy of the black hole. So the time dependence issues would have taken up a whole talk. I just want to brush that aside. We can have a conversation about this afterwards. But what I do want to box at this point is that the entropy is 2 pi r naught over 4g. That's the let me just take this result for the moment and work with that. My goal is to reproduce this result from the field theory. And like I said, this picture illustrates that what I should be thinking about as the field theory dual to this is the ordinary spherical Rindler ds space is just this finite time strip of the field theory. So really, my goal here, if I want to reproduce this from the CFT, is to compute the entropy of a finite time strip of the field theory. And I will draw these to denote that this is periodically identified. This is the object for which I want to compute the entropy. Does the problem make sense? So actually, we'll see. So let me solve the problem. In fact, before I solve the problem, let me draw a copy of this finite time strip of the field theory. And again, this is periodically identified. And let me just start making the most stupid guess I could possibly have about the entropy of this region. So again, it is natural to think of this from the bulk perspective of this finite time strip as arising as the union of causal diamonds. So let me take a single causal diamond. Now, what is the entropy of a single causal diamond? Well, let's call it SI1. I will just take it to be the entanglement entropy of that. Now, let me take another causal diamond. And I'm going to add them. So I should have written 1 here. Now I'll write S of I2. But it looks like I have double counted or double covered this region, which is common to them. So I'm going to subtract it and write S of I1 intersection I2 with a minus sign. That's sort of the stupidest thing you can start doing if you wanted to measure this. Well, now I'm going to continue. Oh, and by the way, this is exactly what would have been the right-hand side if you were trying to write down the Strong subadditivity inequality for these diamonds. So there is a reason why we should have looked at this, because Strong subadditivity, knowing that there is a Strong subadditivity inequality, this is a natural kind of thing to start looking at. So now I'm going to take another diamond, and I will add its entropy content, and I'm going to subtract, well, the interval that I have double counted now, which is just the intersection of I2 and I3. And I'm going to continue this procedure on and on. What am I going to get at the end of the day? Veronica has a question.
I mean, your words about strong subadditivity would have held in higher dimensions, but your overlaps would not have been, you know, sub-causal diamonds in higher dimensions.
Yeah. So that's why I specialized the ADS3 at the very beginning, and it's an open problem how to generalize this to higher dimensions. If we were going to have a discussion about this, it will be at the end. So for the moment, let me just work in ADS3.
But I guess the higher dimensions, just because it's not obvious that there should be any connection, because there is no connection in the higher dimensions.
OK, but I'm going to tell you about the connection that we know is there, and we'll see if it works in higher dimensions next month. So, um, So what is the answer for this? At the end of the day, here, because I'm talking about overlaps of neighboring regions, I'm really talking about some discretization of this space. So I'm not really talking about the strip which looks identically horizontal at the top. It looks like I have some wiggles at the top coming from just the tops of these diamonds. We're going to erase those wiggles at the end. But at the moment, what we have is if I have n diamonds, I have n sitting in front of this. And what I have here is the difference between the entanglement entropy of a single interval and the overlap region between that interval and the next one. So what that is I have a, here I'm going to just use the standard formula for the entanglement entropy. There's a C over 3 sitting here, and now I have log of 2L over mu, where L is the ADS radius, and now I have sine of alpha naught. Alpha naught is the size of the diamond, and I take alpha naught to be really half the size of the interval. And what I have to subtract from this is the overlaps, which is 2L over mu times sine of, now I have alpha naught minus the whatever the overlap region took away from this, which turns out to be pi over n. This is the expression that I get to work with. Now, I pulled this alpha naught out of a hat, but actually we know exactly what this alpha naught is. What this alpha naught is the size of a diamond that is related to just, which is given by the size of the hole that I started with. So here I am in my ADS space, and I have a hole of some fixed size R naught. And so I'm shooting a light ray. But this light ray reaches the boundary at a time, the global time, which is T over L, which is cotangent inverse of R naught over L. That's just a fact. And this guy is precisely what I call alpha naught. So this is the alpha naught that I'm putting in here. It's the size. This is how we obtain the size of the right causal, the correct size of a causal diamond in the boundary. OK. Well, because this calculation is simple, I'm going to actually do it out completely explicitly in the next minute. So what do I do now? I say that I write C over 3. I continue to write that. And now I have the logarithm of, I can drop these pieces because they're common. I have the logarithm of sine alpha naught minus the logarithm of sine alpha naught minus pi over n. I did have an n in front here. I'm going to write this as pi over n in the denominator. And because I introduced a pi here, I have to put a pi here. Does everyone agree with that part? OK. Well, now I'm going to take the continuum limit. So I'm going to erase the wiggles at the top by sending n to infinity. And what I get is pi c over 3 times the derivative with respect to alpha naught of log sine alpha naught. Is that right? Which is pi c over 3 times the cotangent of alpha naught. And what is cotangent of alpha naught? Oh, we know that there. That's just R naught over L, correct? What is C? C is 3L over 2G. And so when I plug in C equal 3L over 2G, what I get is exactly 2 pi R naught over 4G, which is what I wanted to get. So we know exactly that this formula we just tried precisely matches the bulk result that we expected. Question? If I wanted to talk about the entropy, so let's forget about taking a lot of these intervals. But let me just take two of them. So if I have a single interval and another interval, what I may have wanted to compute is the interval of the union of them. And then what this would have been is an upper bound on the entanglement entropy for the union. Now, the union of them has a causal diamond which reaches strictly higher. So the yes, it would have been an upper bound for this taller causal diamond. But I didn't take it to be an upper bound. I took it to be an exact value of the entropy of this. In other words, so we could think of the Strong subadditivity as telling us that as a relation between the the entanglement entropies are information contents in some more general sense between objects which look like that and objects which continue all the way to include the whole causal diamond. I tried this as an experimental setup, and it turned out to work. This is the setup of this. So I want to, I will want to extract something back from this. For the moment, I stumbled with the setup is that, or the status is that I have stumbled upon a formula that works, and I will see how generally it works, and maybe extract something back from it. Okay, so
why are triple and quadruple intersections irrelevant?
Really, the answer is that it works. I have a better answer, which is that we are trying to compute the entropy of a. Okay, really, on this picture, the standard law is that the interior of IDS corresponds to the IR of the CFD, and the exterior corresponds to the UV. So this is one way of dividing what the IR, what we mean by the IR and the UV. It looks like this finite strip in time is the UV, and everything else is the IR. So now, if I want to compute a quantity which tells me about, which is the closest analog, okay, to the extent to which we can talk about entanglement UV between the UV and the IR, this is it. Maybe we can't use those words, but to the extent to which we can, this is it. Now, that object has to be a UV finite quantity. So a necessary condition for obtaining a correct or sensible answer was to cancel off all the UV divergences. So this is exactly what I did, because there is an equal number of UV divergences which count with a plus sign and with a minus sign in this expression. Now, that's part of the reason why I didn't have to include the triple intersections, because they would screw up my count of UV divergences.
Perhaps one other reason is that he has an ordering.
Yeah. And another reason is that I have an ordering. So I know exactly what I mean. And I will not have double counted any region if I just follow the ordering.
But I mean, there's another way to get the answer, which is just to reconstruct the matrix from the entanglement entropy.
So if you're, there is really no answer that I have to this comment. It's true that we could reconstruct the metric, but here's a result that at least some of us hopefully are finding surprising, so I'm putting it out there. And yes, maybe there's nothing new in it because it was already in the metric. Well, that's for you to decide.
Use this to sort of patch together observer-dependent horizons in, say, cosmological background.
I don't know yet. I would like to do that in the future, but this is a very preliminary stage.
You could consider, for example, the field theorem, the
sitter. I would definitely like to do that. So the sitter is what So because this metric, which I already erased, is in Pfefferman-Graham form, we actually expect for there to be some kind of ADS CFT which relates just the spherical and the ADS space to just a field theory which lives on a deformed slice which never reaches outside the strip. The background for this field theory turns out to be the sitter space only when the size of the hole is zero, and for other sizes it's a deformation of the sitter.
No, I understand that, but still.
Yeah. Oh yeah, yeah. I'm not sure. Well,
just a naive question. You probably said this already. Are you interpreting this as computing the entropy of the field theory for that strip or not?
Yeah, I'm interpreting the. My goal was to generalize entanglement entropy to regions bound in time.
Sure.
This is what I propose to be the generalization. I should think of a region which is bounded in time as a union of some causal diamonds and then arrange them in this fashion. And I know exactly what I mean in two field theory dimensions. And in higher dimensions, it's an open question for how to generalize.
Okay, but the state that you started with over here was a pure state.
It was, in fact, ADS vacuum.
It's just a pure state. So the only entanglement here is sort of entanglement across time.
It's the entanglement. Well, hang on. For any piece of the, we have non-zero entanglements for spatial regions.
Sure,
so.
but you covered the entire CFT here.
Exactly. That's the thing that I find interesting about this. But if we wanted to, if we talk about, Well, okay, the motivation for my talk is to say, to what extent can we use this picture to be zoom in on this on the horizon and talk about just Rindler as the, well, if we do that, then, if we undo the zooming in, then that's what we are forced to consider. So, yeah, that's part of the motivation for doing this work, is to really understand.
Some version of coarse grain entanglement entropy.
Well, I'm not sure if I should talk about this as a coarse. To talk about entanglement, as far as I really understand it, we have to have a factorization of the Hilbert space into tensor product pieces. Now, I'm not sure, and in fact, I don't believe that there is a tensor product decomposition of the Hilbert space into the pieces which are just responsible for the interior of the hole and just the outside. So perhaps entanglement is not even the right word to begin with. But there's some notion of an information quantity which quantifies the relation between the exterior and the interior and the bulk, which means the relation between the UV and the IR modes in the field theory. That's what I'm trying to get at. So let me show you what this means, what we have done from the bulk perspective. So we have taken this sum of entanglement entropies for intervals and for their intersections. And I did this as a limit as I made my collection of causal diamonds tighter and tighter packed. So imagine that I start with some spherical surface. This is a picture of a spatial slice of ADS. I started with some finite discretization of that system, and then I increase n, so I make my causal diamonds more tightly packed. I will get this object, and then in the next step, I'm going to get this object. And you can see how in the limit, as I make my causal diamonds in the boundary tighter and tighter packed, roughly the difference between the lengths of the black and the red geodesics should correspond to the length of the curve. This is a geometric reason for why this thing should work. Now, the next question is, how generally does this work? So I promised not just spherical surfaces, but closed curves in general. So here's a closed curve for which I follow exactly the same procedure. But because my curve is not exactly spherical, that means that light rays shot from the surface of that curve are going to reach the boundary at different times, depending on where they were shot from. So now I have a spatially dependent size of my time size of my strip. And this is the picture that I get in the bulk for that. The answer is yes, it also computes the length of that curve. It also computes the length of this curve, for which you might find it surprising. The reason you might find it surprising is that there are some of the geodesics which enter the computation end up probing the interior of the curve. So my original motivation from talking about a spherical Rindler space ceases to be there. There is no sense in which a union of accelerated observer in ADS never see the interior of this curve. In fact, they do, right? Because the curve is convex. Nevertheless, the formula as I apply it directly reproduces the length of the curve. Can you say again? Yeah, that is what I'm saying. Yeah. Well, I'm really just now I have an explicit formula for what I mean in the field theory, so I can just plug a given time strip into the formula. Yeah, I have a map from time strips in the boundary to quantities which are real quantities greater than zero, and no, you don't need to use the bulk to define this thing. Modulo a subtlety that I will tell you about at the end, and I guess I'm nearing the end, so I should start talking about it. But just give me 1 second. So one thing that you can ask is, okay, so I have reproduced this. Have I reproduced this exactly? And the answer would be no, in the sense that we only have a numerical agreement between the length of the curve in the bulk and the information content that comes out of a formula like this one. The generalization of this to a strip which depends with whose time size depends on your location and on the boundary is a certain integral. The length of a curve is also a certain integral. Those integrals always spit out the same answers numerically, but we have not been able to match them exactly. It sounds like a high school student problem, or at most a graduate student's problem, but we've had a postdoc who worked on it for more than 3 weeks now, and we have not been able to show exactly that the agreement holds. So you can take this in two ways. This might arouse your suspicion, or it might, and I'm in that camp, it might make you more excited, because here's a quantity which we don't know why it works algebraically. We have intuited this from just ADS-CFT, and it works. So it might be a sign that the content of this story is non-trivial. So it works for curves like this one. It works for curves like this one. And in fact, I put this up there because it illustrates where the problems are. So numerically, the integrals start being sickly behaved where my curve approaches the origin of ADS, and when it starts sort of almost self-intersecting, but it still actually works. And then it also works for curves like this one. And just to give you a sense of how non-trivial this is, I have actually drawn the geodesics whose lengths I need to compute the final answer. And the answer is, when I compute them, so this is a generalization of a picture like this one, yes? When I compute them, it looks like this. Usually when this is the reason why I'm putting out this non-informative picture on the screen is that it gives you a sense of how non-trivial the result is. I needed all of those geodesics, which have very crazy behaviors far away from the curve, to just get the right answer. In fact, there is one more reason why I put out just this picture and not some other one on the board. And that reason sits here in the corner. So if you look here, you see a little bit of a single geodesic out there. Do you see that? That corresponds to those spikes in the interior of the curve. Does that make sense? And so that tells you just how to these features in the curve. Yeah. So it tells you just how sort of non-local and how delocalized the information about the length of this curve is in the book. And now that I said that, let me just give you a short status report of where this works. So yes, we've tested it for any closed curve except self-intersecting curves in ADS-free, in empty ADS-free. We know that it works for spherical curves in the BTZ spacetime too. And we're looking for a generalization. This goes to Veronica's question to higher dimensions, and we haven't formulated this yet. Now we have 5 minutes, and we can spend those 5 minutes in talking about what this means for firewalls. So here is a conjecture.
Can I just ask a brief question? What
yeah.
you're showing us in the bulk is a spatial slice, right?
Yes.
How does it go in time? Does it go on for some time?
So this is because I've been only working in empty ADS space, I was interested in lengths of curves which live on a spatial slice. And to the extent to which I can talk about a spherical Rindler ADS space for a given curve, it's a region of spacetime which is causally disconnected from the interior of that curve. That's all it is. But that's where the time comes into play for no other reason. Oh, the spherical Rindler ADS space? Oh, no, it goes for a finite time. And that's the whole point, that I'm trying to compute the entropy content, information content, of a finite in time region. Yeah. So we computed this quantity, which we believe generalizes entanglement entropies to regions which are bounded in time. And what does this quantity really mean? So for entanglement entropy, we have a so we do understand what this is about. It counts the entropy of the that arises from a density matrix, which contains the information about the density, the entanglement spectrum, and that we understand what this means. So what exactly does this quantity mean? We have a conjecture for this, and we believe that what it means, if I go back to my first slide, I should think of this as the following. Suppose that I have a field theory, and I send out a bunch of observers, each of whom can measure whatever they want, but in a given causal diamond. And then they all come back to me and report the information. They tell me what they found. And from that, I asked, after I got all the reports and collected them, I asked the question, how many pure states are consistent with this set of observations that were reported back to me? We think that this is what this quantity really means. And if it does, then I'd like to pose the following question for the audience. Is it consistent? Now, this is a hypothesis for what this quantity means, but let's assume that it is true. Is it consistent to talk about the horizon for a pure state? And the answer is no. The reason why the answer is no is that if I have a horizon, then light-like trajectories ejected from the horizon will never reach the boundary. That's the definition of the horizon. And so my finite in time strip, if I choose my hole in holography to just coincide with the horizon, there's no finite piece of the field theory that corresponds to it. It is the whole field theory. Does that make sense? So now if I make my hole a little larger, it encompasses the horizon, but is just outside the horizon, I will have a finite time piece of the field theory, but the time is arbitrarily large. Yes? And this is the behavior that I expect for any state that contains a horizon in the bulk. Now, let me use my definition my interpretation of what this quantity means and ask what happens in a pure state. In the field theory, if I start with a pure state, if I measure it for long enough times, eventually I will always know what the state is, which means that the length of this curve that I have defined this way will go to zero. Now, I don't want to interpret that shrinkage to zero very physically or geometrically, but I'm just saying this is a different behavior from what we would have gotten had we had a horizon. And so if this hypothesis is true, then we can't talk about horizons for pure states. And with that thought, I'm going to end. Thank you. But I will need to have some extra. But I will need to have some extra directions in which would they would have to be there for the capping off to be sensible. So I will need to generalize this to ADS4 at least, where I would have some sense of how to talk not about lengths of curves but about surfaces, and then we can have this conversation for real. Yeah. So the question is, take a field theory which does have an interpretation as that capping off, and with that capping off, that will necessarily have to happen in some higher than two-dimensional field theories, and see what happens. So I'm very interested to find out what the answer is. So. Yeah.
Could you say again what the interpretation is?
Yes. So we have right. So I shoot out light rays and define for me some finite time strip in the bulk. Now let's say that this was the horizon of a black hole. This light ray is just going to go vertically. Let's say that I started a little outside the black hole. It's going to go on for a very long time, in fact, arbitrarily long time, and reach there. And this is the behavior that I have to have if I have a state whose bulk dual has a horizon. Now, take the hypothesis I made about the meaning of this information content of a finite time strip. That means I have measured everything I could for some finite time, but now arbitrarily long time, eventually I will know exactly what pure state I'm talking about, which means that my uncertainty about what state I'm talking about will be zero, that my observations will be consistent with only a single pure state. At that moment, the quantity that I have derived there will have shrunk to zero. That's the content of the hypothesis. So it is not the same behavior as I have here. So that's the argument. Exactly. This is sort of reformulation of that, but a reformulation that I hope is a little more falsifiable, and that's why I'm putting it out there. Yeah. So Mukun and Veronica are experts on this. But all I will ever need for this construction is causal wedges, which are associated with well, first of all, because I'm in three dimensions, they're just intervals, and in that case, I will not have a problem. In higher dimensions, just looking ahead to the future, I will always ever need causal wedges associated with spherical surfaces, because I'm always interested in encapsulating everything that is causally disconnected from my region, from my whole. And for spherical surfaces, causal wedges agree with causal holographic information agrees with entanglement entropy. In specific state. Oh yeah, yeah. So because I've worked on the it's true. We don't. We will have to see how this plays out for states which are not the vacuum and not the BTZ spacetime. It's just too early for me to answer that question properly. Thank you very much.